Hello again, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 245 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, with you as always. With me this week is Kenny. Welcome back to the show, Kenny.
Thank you. It's good to be back like vintage Rondo in the playoffs.
Vintage Rondo. I know that Leo is really enjoying Rondo's performances right now.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing both him and Mirotić really kind of coming out to play in the playoffs and, yeah, really doing well. But I'm not going to rub too much salt in that wound, so yeah. I'm sorry about that.
Well, but, we've got that pick that's somewhere between 15 and 20, I guess. So, yes, we are back on the air, as we always are each and every week, except for the 1 week over Easter. But we are back to talk about our favorite subjects, basketball, video games, a little bit of real basketball as well, with the aforementioned playoffs running, and a little bit of news this week, Kenny. It's got some announcements of new games, a new game coming out, something to talk about as we wait for Live and 2K to really do something, although 2K has done something. But yeah, actual news. It's kind of fresh, refreshing and welcome at this time of the year.
Yeah, it's always great to have news, and particularly from people that aren't necessarily the top two companies. So, yeah, it's exciting times, and hopefully these new announcements bring something of real quality to the table.
Yeah, we've talked before about third parties throwing their hat into the ring, maybe indie developers, and we do have that to talk about, of course. But we're going to start out with some NBA Live news. Well, it's not really NBA Live news, it's EA news that could potentially impact NBA Live moving forward. And it's an article, or rather some comments, from the chief design officer Patrick Söderlund at EA, basically talking about the controversy with the Battlefront 2 microtransactions and all that stuff that we've alluded to before, as we've talked about Live avoiding doing that. And the key quote basically is, it's clear to us that players see the company differently than we do, which I guess has been a long-standing issue with EA.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's interesting because I never really thought of EA's reputation as being that bad, but then I kind of remembered that they are not just NBA Live, they're Battlefront, they're, you know, the UFC games, the Sims games as well, which they've got a bit of backlash over by, you know, kind of gouging their user base there. So
SimCity, when they had Always On for the SimCity that came out a few years ago, that was a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Need for Speed, and the mobile version of Need for Speed is very microtransaction-based, I believe, or certainly pushing towards that. So they have that reputation as the company. I mean, they were named the worst company in the US 2 years running, which, I mean, that maybe it shows skewed priorities, because I don't think a video game company is as bad as maybe financial companies, so perhaps doing real damage to people's livelihood and whatnot, but the point is they do have that reputation, and they seem to be acknowledging that. The controversy with microtransaction and loot boxes in Star Wars Battlefront 2, they've obviously made mistakes there, and they're looking at how to rehabilitate their image and avoid doing those things in the future. Of course, a lot of people will be cynical, understandably so, but as far as that approach goes, if they are going to avoid going down that gouging route, that is obviously very good news for the NBA Live series moving forward, because they've done a really great job of avoiding that. Really, the only microtransactions are in Ultimate Team, and you get pretty good value from Ultimate Team packs, so it's not as bad as some of 2K's gouging, especially this year. I know you've avoided that smartly by not playing 2K18, but I'm sure you've heard us talking about it and griping about it many times, and the community at large. So for Live to continue down that path and to avoid going down the other path of really gouging gamers, would be the really smart thing to do for Live moving forward as it rebuilds its brand, especially with the traction it's got with Live 18.
I think it's a really smart decision to not go down that route, and mainly because the fact that their competitor is doing that. So I think if they can bring out the product that is kind of on the same, I guess on the same standing in terms of like gameplay, then maybe the thing that kind of pushes them ahead will be the lack of microtransactions. So I think it's a really good decision.
Yeah, it's funny, a selling point by not selling you anything in a way, or selling you extra. You know, it seems very vintage idea that we're selling the game on what you see and what you pay for is what you get. I mean, obviously there are the microtransactions in Ultimate Team, but to actually go that old school route and not really gouge the customer, it's refreshing. And the fact that EA is taking stock of its reputation and taking this controversy seriously and not just waiting for it to die down and then try and ride that bubble again until it bursts, it's admirable that they're doing that. It's obviously smart business to do it because they took a lot of heat for it, and rightfully so, with some of the things they were trying to do. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the great things about Live, as you said, and again, as you also said, the fact that 2K has gone so aggressive with it, it's a great way to really show that goodwill and look like the good guys, which for EA has not always been easy.
It hasn't been, but I think with NBA Live, people seem to have a bit more optimism with it, because NBA Live 18, for all of its faults, it has been a strong comeback year in terms of like gameplay. And I suppose in Live Ultimate Team, the other modes are a little bit kind of thin on the ground, but there's definitely a lot of potential there. And the fact that they're not looking to gouge people, I think, is going to bode well for them in the future, if they stick to it, that is.
Absolutely, and there is that optimism with Live. I look ahead to Live 19, and I think it could be a very strong year if they continue to flesh out the modes and polish the gameplay as they have in Live 18. Really need to do something with franchise, a little bit more depth in the One, or I almost said Rising Star then, in the One and the online modes. Getting squads, I think, in Live Pro-Am and Live Run, I think that's crucial. I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of fun doing that in 2K, and to be able to squad up, and even if it's just, even if you don't have all the design stuff that you have in 2K, but you still have the ability to have your own jerseys and meet up easily and take on squads and have stats tracking and win-loss records and everything, that's just so important that people want to, if you have that competitive online gaming, to have some consistent squad for matchmaking and also scorekeeping.
And I think that's one of the next steps for Live, because I know for me personally, there have been times where I have missed the whole Pro-Am thing. And it's not necessarily because it's, I missed the mode or, how great the mode was or anything like that, which, for all its faults, it is a really solid mode that I have enjoyed in the past. But I've missed the whole strategy and I guess the banter as well, and just the whole social aspect as well.
The camaraderie, yeah, of all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, there have been times where I've seen 2K18 in the shops and been like, oh, I'm kind of tempted by this, but at the same time, I know it's an uphill battle for me at this point because it is such a grind. And I think that is kind of a fault of 2K18 in general, is that you're not going to get a lot of late adopters now that they know that they need so much VC in order to just be decent.
Exactly. And again, I think Live, with its progression system, has done a really good job. That, I mean, obviously they don't charge, there's no pay to win mechanics in the One, but the fact that there's no terrible grind either, so that you can actually have a couple of different players, that's viable. I couldn't imagine doing it in 2K.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine it either. And Live, I think Live did it really well in that it gives you 5 slots, so you can literally have a different player for every position, which is something that I strive to have earlier on, but, I guess the personal life hasn't so much permitted that as of late. But, maybe if I get a bit more time, I will create a few more positions. I know I've already got a center, and I created a point guard about a week ago, but, It's a bit late into the game, I think, to create the other 3 positions.
There is still a bit of grinding, obviously, but at least nothing like 2K. And again, going online, of course, the pay-to-win mechanics govern everything online, because you can avoid not paying, but other people aren't, and they're going to set the tone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's definitely a big drawback when it comes to the pay-to-win, model, I suppose.
And of course, Battlefront 2 did add the microtransactions. They patched them back into the game, but they're just for cosmetic items. They reworked the way loot boxes work. I wouldn't actually mind seeing some of the loot box systems changed in Live. It's a pretty fair system the way it is, especially with the way you earn reward points. But for things like basic accessories, I would like to just purchase them straight from a store, especially for the NBA side of things. Maybe not so much the streets, but for the league. But it is good to see that the EA are learning from their mistakes and taking it on board. I mean, I certainly hope 2K do, but you look at how successful 2K18 has still been despite all the controversy, and you wonder whether they would change direction as EA seems to be. But hopefully EA at least will avoid similar pitfalls in the future.
Yeah, I think there's hope for EA. As far as 2K is concerned, is 2K18 been the highest selling 2K ever so far? Or
I believe so, and it's also got great retention rates, although I think they've dropped off a little bit because there's been some surveys they've put out about people, why have you stopped playing 2K? And one of the options is, I've started playing Live 18, so they must be aware that a lot of people are actually saying, because there has been that this year, like people mocked the idea of playing Live as an alternative, but now it's becoming viable, especially as it continues to improve.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of surprised that they didn't put going back to NBA 2K17 in that survey, but yeah, maybe there's just not enough kind of metrics to suggest that that might be the case. But I know that me personally, I've gone back to 2K17 in the last few weeks, and I'll probably discuss it more in my month or two in basketball gaming. But yeah, it's 2K17 is still a fun game to play, so I don't see why more people aren't going back to that.
Yeah, I guess it's just the fact that maybe more people are playing the latest one. I mean, I've gone to the park a couple of times in 2K17 just to see, and there hasn't been anyone on. Maybe it was just the time I was on, but perhaps it's just matchmaking.
You might have to, you may have been on like an empty park or something, because that happened to me, and then I just went to ante up and then back to the park, and yeah, the park seemed to have like quite a few people.
Interesting.
At least the second one did, so. Sometimes you might just be on the wrong park.
Interesting to see the metrics on that one, but it was funny. It was very much like Fallout, actually, wandering through a wasteland. Almost felt like capturing the video and putting the wasteland theme.
2K never changes.
That's right. Well, hopefully they do, as far as their practices go. But speaking of 2K and their direction, of course, a big thing this year has been the launch of the NBA 2K League, based on 2K Prime, of course. Something that we're nowhere near qualifying for, unfortunately, NLC Grind Time, nor Thrill Ho last year, but we've had our fun sometimes. But the league is going ahead. They had their draft a couple of weeks ago, of course, and they've actually announced a deal, Kenny, with Twitch for broadcasting.
Yeah, that's pretty big. So what does the deal entail exactly? Are they going to broadcast all their games through Twitch, or
I have to double check. It's at least a majority, if not all of them. But I think they're going to be the primary broadcaster, I believe. I don't think they've got another TV deal. The interesting thing is that they're saying things like, welcome to the team, Twitch. And people are saying, well, you know, Twitch is pretty big by itself with a lot of genres and games. I don't think they... I think you need them more than they need you, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just imagine, like, if they got the deal with YouTube and they were like, welcome to the team, YouTube. And it's like,
Google.
It's just one of the biggest websites in the world.
You got Google money behind YouTube. You. Yeah. So just trying to find that article. I should have brought that up. But obviously, it's Twitch being very popular these days, naturally, and the alternative to YouTube, especially for streaming. A great deal for them. Let me just see. NBA and Twitch expanded their partnership Wednesday, announcing a multi-year agreement for Twitch to live stream all of the fledgling games. So it will be all of the 2K League games. So that's where they're going to be. And yeah, and why not? I mean, live is EA has obviously got the deal with ESPN, so that was probably out. They don't have anything official with TNT, and I don't think TNT would necessarily show it. So definitely starting out with that online over the top service with streaming it through Twitch. Seems like a smart move.
I think so. Just to kind of gauge the interest in it as well. Like, it would have been kind of risky putting it on like a television channel or whatever. I don't know why I envisioned it being on TV, but for some reason I just thought, yeah, it was just going to get like its kind of get a broadcast deal on TV for some reason. But well, Twitch makes a lot of sense.
Madden, that league is shown on TV, on ESPN. Probably as part of the deal with EA, but yeah, I did wonder whether it might be on NBA TV, for example, or the NBA streaming service, because it is very partnered with the league, and the league does have that partnership with Twitch that shows up to six G League games a week. So I guess it makes sense.
I was just thinking how depressing it would have been if it was on like TNT or NBA TV, but yeah, I'm just kind of glad it's on Twitch now. Now I think about it, but yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but I just, yeah, I, as far as I'm concerned, E-League should just be completely separate from NBA and kind of real sports. So,
and I'm just reading that they're going to stream up to 199 games during the upcoming 2K League season, which begins May 1st. So we're very close to the tip-off of that league. That'll include 17 weeks worth of matchups, including 3 in-season tournaments, playoffs, and the league finals, the inaugural season running through August. Yeah, so it's going to be on Twitch. I guess I'll have to check it out. I'm interested to see what kind of quality the games are, because as we both know, that quality really does vary in our experience playing 2K Pro-Am. Sometimes you do get that strategic battle and the great back and forth, and other times it's a cheese fest, and these are going to be professional gamers, so you would hope that it's going to show the game. But as professional gamers, they may also know all the best exploits and tricks, which aren't necessarily great-looking basketball. They're effective gameplay strategies with the game, but you know, is it going to be entertaining to watch?
There was like that one glitch that came to mind that I always used to exploit, where the sender would be running through the key and I would just hit the take charge button and pretty much draw them into the foul every time. I would love to see that in E-League, but at the same time, it would be good to see good basketball being played.
I was actually thinking we were going to talk about the Kenny exploit, which is driving baseline and getting the foul.
You know, I tried that in Puck the other day and I actually stepped out of bounds. So
wow.
Maybe they fixed that. maybe it's just not a thing in Puck, but that was a fun exploit for me back in the day, I have to admit.
Every time we get it to work in 2K18, we're like, that's the Kenny exploit. That's your move if we can get it.
Patented? Yeah, it's
patented. So the only thing with the league, of course, is it's great for the brand, obviously, and expanding the brand beyond the game. But at the same time, as a player of the game, as one of the lowly plebs paying for the experience to play, the privilege to pay to play NBA 2K, not to be paid to play it. My hope is that with the focus on the league, it's not going to take anything away from the way the game is balanced or attention to the game, that it's not just built around this league and these pro players and these elite YouTubers, because a majority of the fan base want this solid product. And instead, of course, as we've discussed many times on the podcast, they've been hit with instead microtransactions and gouging and even step backwards in gameplay in 2K18. So I'm just hoping that it doesn't adversely affect the game for the rest of us moving forward. I know I've mentioned it before, I don't want to harp on it and beat a dead horse, but you know, it's... At the end of the day, the big thing, the moneymaker, and what's brought them to this point is having a quality video game. And that's what the loyal fan base is interested in and has supported them and allowed them to get to this point. So I really do hope that the league doesn't turn out to be a bad thing for the rest of us.
Yeah, I hope it isn't a bad thing as well. But I guess kind of to repeat what you may have mentioned, like maybe one or two podcasts ago, maybe it's an opportunity for them to see what's actually wrong with the game and fix some legacy issues that are there. Because if it comes up in a broadcast, then it's going to be kind of embarrassing for them. So, I guess I have a bit of optimism in that sense, hoping that they can use that opportunity for broadcast to kind of iron out whatever issues are left in the game and kind of make it a lot more polished than it has been.
Well, certainly the game is going to be under a lot of scrutiny, so
yeah.
I guess maybe that's a good thing. That if it's if people are pointing at the game and saying, "Oh, that doesn't look good," then you know, maybe it's for the best. But hopefully it succeeds. You know, we do need 2K to succeed. We need at least 2 successful games on the market. So yeah, it will be interesting as always to see how it all turns out. So NBA Playgrounds is back in the news. Ben and I talked about it the other week. And we were kind of saying that it's a bit disappointing that the big announcement seemed to be that they're partnering with Jack Daniels for a giveaway to the the NBA Awards ceremony. And, of course, they turned around and actually made a much more significant announcement, which is the release of Playgrounds 2 in summer 2018, so just a few months away now. And it was around about this time last year that we heard about the first Playgrounds, and then it came out in May, of course, of last year. But NBA Playgrounds 2 is looking to build on the success of the original. And I know at one point it had sold at least 500,000 copies digitally. Of course, it's a digital-only release, but it had sold about 500,000 copies at the time, which was very successful for an indie developer and or a semi-indie developer, I guess. Saber Interactive was certainly not as big as a EA or a Visual Concepts, but the game has sold really well. It's been received pretty well for the most part, although a lot of us have had our gripes, which we've talked about before. But the new game has been announced for summer 2018, and some of the big things that they're adding this year, Kenny, are an offline season mode, so lengthier than just the tournaments that they had in the original, online worldwide online league, which will also have divisions and score leaderboards, scoreboards, and backed by dedicated servers, so it's not just the matchmaking they had last year, and also some gameplay improvements and some changes to the progression system. They've talked about working on the feedback that they got from last year's game. So, in theory, it's another very promising game, and looks like it might actually succeed where last year's game fell a little short.
Here's hoping. I think the offline tournament, or the season, sorry, is very promising, and that, you know, I think as far as NBA Playgrounds is concerned, the offline content was always a bit lacking for me.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I think if Playgrounds 2 can really kind of bring it as far as the offline content, I'm really looking forward to it if that's the case. But, you know, I think I would have liked to have seen them kind of do a tournament like NBA On Fire Edition, do it team by team, or what was it, division by division, actually, now I think about it, because I bought that game, I think, mid last year, and it still held up really well, and a lot of the mechanics, fantastic for an arcade game. And I guess I bought it after Playgrounds, and I guess playing On Fire Edition after Playgrounds, it made me feel a little bit more disappointed in NBA Playgrounds, and that it kind of didn't live up to that as much. But I mean, yeah, at the same time, high expectations and everything like that for a smaller company. But as far as I'm concerned, looking at the new trailer, I just kind of want to see something a bit different. And I didn't feel like I saw that in the new trailer, but I'll still give it a go. With that said,
I know what you mean. It's a cinematic trailer. It's meant to look cool and everything, but it doesn't really highlight anything about the game, the new modes. It's a debut trailer. It's a teaser trailer, essentially.
Yeah,
that's showing it from cinematic angles. And it's interesting that you mentioned On Fire Edition, because I do love OFE. I do feel it is one of the best, if not the best, arcade basketball games out there. The way it built with the real AI tech, so that the CPU actually learns from you. It's not just the same cheesy mechanics over and over again. The road trip mode, of course, is fantastic. I just really love On Fire Edition, and it does set the bar very high. So that's where some of my disappointment with Playgrounds came from last year. So I guess maybe now you're seeing where I was coming from as far as my disappointment.
Yeah, definitely.
Coming from On Fire Edition first. But that's interesting that you kind of retroactively felt a bit disappointed by sort of seeing what it what it could have been. But and yeah, it is harsh criticism, because it's the first first NBA game that Saber has made, and there are going to be those teething problems and everything. But of course, at the same time, you do have to have some standards. People say that they point to the price tag a lot and say, oh, it's only $20. It was actually $30 Australian. But On Fire Edition was $15 back in the day, and it was a much deeper game. And again, bigger company. But I think if you're making excuses about the price tag and everything, we've seen some really quality games for under $20, basically. So I think that's a bit of a cop-out. I do think people give the game a bit of a pass sometimes. But the other thing we're seeing is that people are a bit jaded by the original as well. It's kind of a fight between the people who are really pro and really con, really against at the moment. Some people not feeling, you know, they're looking at it and saying, well, this is the game we should have got last year. Why should we buy it?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you could make that argument for a lot of NBA games, but
the annual releases, yeah, certainly.
Yeah. I think Playgrounds probably got a little bit more to prove as far as that's concerned, because I guess we want to see a bit more of an improvement as far as game mechanics are concerned, particularly like stealing the ball and how the AI acts when, I don't know, it somehow knows when you're trying to get a milestone, like 5 steals or something, because even when the game's on the line, sometimes they just try and play keep away.
I've noticed really that as well. It's the AI feels very cheap, very predetermined, that they don't necessarily have with with more sophisticated games, and that was what I loved about On Fire Edition. Rebounding was pretty clunky as well in last year's game, so I think that's another area where they need to improve, and that again is something that we need to see in trailers and preview videos for sure. I mean, I see why people feel jaded, and the whole idea of, oh, we kind of feel like we're being paid to be beta testers. I mean, there's that whole aspect of it, but at the same time, I think Playgrounds was still a pretty solid game. You know, it wasn't fantastic. I think sometimes at its worst, it felt a bit like a, you know, poor man's NBA Jam sounds a bit harsh. It's kind of a decent NBA Jam clone, a decent NBA Jam clone with NBA Street elements. And I'm actually quoting an article that I've already got scheduled to go out tomorrow about NBA Playgrounds about this. But for those who are listening to the podcast now or haven't read the article yet, I feel like this Playgrounds has the opportunity to be one of the definitive arcade games of this generation, especially if NBA Jam doesn't make a comeback anytime soon. But as it is, last year's game kind of felt like a decent NBA Jam style game with street elements, where I think it could be this really definitive or iconic arcade game, and I do think it has that potential. So there was that disappointment last year that it didn't live up to that, but I think it's got a new opportunity now, and if they do enhance those mechanics, and if these new modes are robust and deep and engaging, and they've got that new content coming throughout the year, they've got a pretty good opportunity with NBA Playgrounds 2 to do something quite special. And last year's game was okay, decent, respectable, pretty good, fun at times. This could be great, and I'm certainly hoping that it's takes it even further than last year.
It's a fantastic opportunity for them, and I just hope that this year is a step in the right direction, at the very least. I don't expect kind of the world from it at the moment, but if it's gradually building up to what you're suggesting is, like, you know, the arcade game for this generation, then I think they need to slowly build to that. So yeah, I just hope that this second game is in the step in the right direction.
And the other thing that's been mentioned is that it's coming out a year later. And people are saying, well, why a year later? Just do arcade games need to be every year? And certainly they don't. There was a couple of years between street games. But if you go back to the 90s with NBA Jam and the early 2000s with EA's Jam and Jam on Fire Edition, the original Jam came out in 93, 25 years ago, scarily. And Jam Tournament Edition, the remaster of the sequel with the extra features and everything, came out in 94. So they were releasing sequels, expanded editions, the year later. And then EA did that again with On Fire Edition coming out in 2011 after the 2010 reboot. So I think if you can work on the debut game and make it great, you know, if Playgrounds 2 is a game that can last 2 or 3 years, I don't, because NBA Playgrounds 1, the player dropped off. People had lost interest in Playgrounds after a year. That's the thing. If they can release a game a year later that then has a bit more life in it, 2 or 3 years, that's when you can have more time between them. But I think it makes sense to release Playgrounds 2 a year later with the enhanced edition, you know, being an enhancement of the first, I should say, and a worthy sequel and an improved sequel, and then that's the game that has the longevity, and that's learning from the original. I think that's a good idea.
I think so too, and, you know, not even, not just NBA Live, NBA Jam, I mean, but Street Fighter 2 had several editions brought out after the original game, and I'm reminded of that because there's an anniversary edition coming out this year, and a lot of the content is Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Super Street Fighter 2, and I don't remember a whole lot of people complaining about that.
It was just the way it was back in the day, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think if they can bring an enhanced game to NBA Playgrounds 2, then I think that's something that we need.
Yeah, I'd forgotten all about Street Fighter, being more of a Mortal Kombat guy, I suppose. But but yeah, that is a perfect example, obviously, that there were so many additions. And it was just the way it was back in the day. And I guess in retrospect, it was kind of weird. But if you can improve on it, why not? And I think Playgrounds 2 has that opportunity again. And I certainly hope it gets there. So there is another game out at the moment, speaking of other companies throwing their hat into the ring. And this is an indie developer. I'm hoping I'm saying it right. Is it Namo Gamo? They've released a game called do apologize. I will get clarification on that at some point, I'm sure. They released a game called Basketball Classics, and it's out on PC through Steam through Early Access at the moment. And basically, it's a throwback to 8-bit basketball games like Double Dribble, the original Tecmo NBA Basketball, which came out on both a Super Nintendo and a Nintendo Entertainment System version. With those 8-bit graphics and everything, but it's got modern mechanics, and it's obviously been designed with years of working on video games and better design concepts. And it's a really cool throwback game. I was alerted to the game on Twitter by Razor from our community. Shout out to Razor, one of our contributors in the NLSC forum, and one of our members of our modding community. Let me know about it. It's currently on sale for about $9 US through the early access sale on Steam. And yeah, it's actually a lot of fun. The simple gameplay in the style of the late 80s, early 90s, like a Double Dribble, but just plays so much better and very fluid, and it's got a shot meter, and it's got all these, well, it doesn't have real teams, but it's got teams that are designed both on current league and also retro NBA, and you can see who's standing in for whom, and especially when you look at the title screen with some of the pixel art they've got of the various players, like Jordan doing his dunk with the famous shot of Jordan with the doing that reverse dunk with these necklace on the gold chains. That's one of the ones they've used, and even LeBron doing his king dance or whatever you want to call that, things like that. But it's really, it's got those old school mechanics that are still very well done because they're done in the modern way, and you've got the Double Dribble like cutscenes when you go for the dunk, but you've got to tap the button to make sure that you beat the defender to be able to dunk on them. And things like that. It's just really well done, and I've played a little bit of it so far, but there is a story mode which I haven't really gotten into yet. But I'm very impressed by it. It's early access, but it feels very polished.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the screenshots from Steam now, and going through the trailer for it, it looks like they've actually got Craig Sager in the game as well, interviewing somebody. So I think that's a pretty cool touch. Graphically, it kind of reminds me a little of this game I've been playing lately called Party Hard, in that, like, the whole 8-bit graphic, almost Commodore 64 style to it. Obviously, yeah, it's a lot different game than Party Hard, but it looks cool, and I definitely want to check it out at some point. And it looks like it's only $9 US on Steam at the moment, so it's apparently that's a special promotion that ends on the 25th of April. So I guess if anybody wants to get onto that, then yeah, now's a good time to do it.
If you have any appreciation for that era of basketball gaming, and you grew up with some of those primitive games by today's standards, I guess, even the early Lakers versus Celtics, the NBA playoff series by EA, the forerunner to NBA Live, of course, and Double Dribble and Tecmo NBA Basketball, that kind of stuff, Super Tecmo NBA Basketball as well. It's that kind of in between 8-bit and 16-bit graphics that there's a real charm to it, and we've seen more of that with different genres, like a Shovel Knight, for example, sort of a throwback to the Super Nintendo 16-bit era of platformers, and a Treasure Adventure game for the PC, kind of 8-bit graphics, but the mechanics are very modern and or very advanced compared to a lot of what NES games were. But we haven't really seen that with basketball games that much, so it was an interesting project to do, and it's the game that I didn't know that I wanted yet. Having picked it up, it's obviously not a competitor or replacement for Live or 2K, obviously. But for that retro-inspired, retro-themed experience, it's a lot of fun, and it's very well designed. I'm very impressed with it.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check it out within the next week or two and give my impressions on it. But I'm definitely looking forward to it. I really like the aesthetic, and I guess it's always great to see a different game on the market. So,
it's something different. It's obviously very retro inspired. I'm not sure how much it'll appeal to people who are. There are some people, obviously, who if it doesn't have the latest and greatest graphics, it's garbage. You know, and if it's simplified, it's not. But it's a cheaper game. It's retro inspired. It's very open what it is. It's this great throwback. I think it will find people who. I mean, there are people who never played NES or Atari or some of those early systems that go back to them and just enjoy that gameplay for what it is, that simple, straightforward gameplay experience. And like the play calling, for example, in Basketball Classics, as you get the inbound, you bring it up court, you're presented with three strips that you can along the court that you you move your player into, and if you keep going along that strip, it'll actually call out the play, like an isolation or a pick and roll, things like that. So it's, yeah, it's this really a reimagined, well-designed of these old games, and frankly, it plays better than Double Dribble ever did. If you go back to my Way Back Wednesday on Double Dribble, which, okay game for the, you know, pretty good game for its era and everything, as a lot of those old games are. It's, sometimes it's hard to look at them through the lens of the time, especially when we're used to so much more greater sophisticated games. But no, I'm very impressed by Basketball Classics, and I'm planning on doing some features about it and talking about it a little more. Had a bit of a back and forth with the developers on Twitter, because I posted some comments and they were very appreciative, and looking maybe getting them on the podcast if we can set that up, and or set up an interview with them or something and talk more about the game, which would be great, because obviously it is this very great project that's going on. So I'd love to get some more insight into it. That'd be cool if we can set that up. So with that being said, obviously we'll give more impressions on that and react to more news as it comes out. But with all the news basically done and dusted for this week, it's time to talk about our week in basketball gaming.
Oh, that's a devastating dunk in his face. Oh, he just stole his heart with that dunk right there.
Or for that matter, our weeks or our months or our quarter of the year in basketball gaming, as the case may be.
It's been a few months for me.
So, yeah, you said you've been playing some NBA 2K17 lately. You've gone back to a game that we quite enjoyed last year, despite some of the issues we had.
Yeah, and I was surprised to find out that after a few gaming sessions, I actually have a winning record in the park, which I never thought would happen. But, I had a couple of really fun sessions and got a few wins on the board. Some frustrating teammates, of course, but... you know, that's what you get when you play with a bunch of randoms. But it was good to kind of dust it off again and use my stretch big power forward, which was kind of fun. I guess at the time I didn't really appreciate that make as much as I did now. But it was actually quite fun.
See, I'd be up for jumping on for a couple of games of 2K17 and just seeing what it's like these days. You know, especially having come from some frustration with 2K18. I know it's a problem with X because X doesn't have a working disk drive in his PS4 anymore, and the game, the digital version is still ridiculously expensive. I think it's still $100 or so to get it digitally. So,
is it really?
It is. It hasn't been discounted yet. No. So
wow.
So if you want to pick up last year's game, you can obviously find cheap physical copies, but if your disk drive's not working, then you've got to go digital. It's no good for X. But yeah, I'd be keen to jump on because, again, I've gone on the park sometimes and it has been deserted. So I was all ready to do a video about that. But I guess maybe it's the video is, yeah, people are still in the park. And yeah, I'd even give Pro-Am a try. I'd be interested to see if people are still playing Pro-Am because, you know, a lot of people have moved on to 2K18. But it sounds like there are still people, as long as the servers are up, still playing 2K17.
Now, Pro-Am's a bit of a different story, I think, because when I tried walking on, there's, like, nobody there.
No one there. So,
It might be a bit harder to get a match up in Pro-Am, but I think there was definitely enough in the park, because I've posted screenshots about it on Twitter, and they were kind of, like, enough for, you know, a couple of 3-on-3 games and even the inferior 2-on-2, but,
Not everyone has moved on. That is interesting. It's obviously too late to check out 2K16, but I guess we never really went back to 2K16 after we did 2K17, so it's hard to... We never had that comparison.
I don't think we really had to, though. I mean, 2K17 wasn't perfect, but at the same time, there was still enough to it to kind of keep us coming back. You know, even outside of the online modes like My League and My Team and stuff like that, even though My Team, a big chunk of it is online.
Absolutely.
And I think there was still enough there.
You know, a lot of people saying 2K17 is the worst of the series. I think it's the best of this generation. I think it's my favorite 2K of the current generation. I really liked last year's game. I played the hell out of it.
I played it a lot as well.
500 games of Pro-Am, we certainly did play a lot.
Yeah, and you know, a few seasons of My League, and the pretty much did all the challenges, all offline challenges anyway, for My Team. So, yeah, I played that game a lot. So, it was definitely one of the better ones. I kind of it and 16, I think it's neck and neck for me, but I'd probably just give the edge to 17, I think, at this point.
I think we ended up playing it a lot more. If nothing else, we seem to get more hooked on last year's game. That it just hasn't been there. And I mean, obviously, other things get in the way, life, work, other what, you know, circumstances that you can't always game as much as you used to. But even when I have the time to play 2K18, I really only play it once or twice a week now, rather than last year where I would get on as often if I had the opportunity to play every day in a week, I would. If I had the time to, you know, play My Career or whatever, I'd be playing a few My Career games. We'd have a few sessions of 2K Pro-Am last year. At one point, we were playing, not all of us, but certainly you, Ben, and I were playing at least two or three sessions a week sometimes, sometimes more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of interesting that 2K18 doesn't have that, you know, you don't feel the need to kind of go back to it as much. Like, maybe the grinding has kind of made you a bit jaded towards it.
It is. What I'm guessing. I liked last year's, even with My Career, you know how I feel about My Career stories, but I thought last year's story was okay. I liked the writing. I mean, the fact that it was written by someone who does have Hollywood credentials, whereas this year, if you go into IMDb and look who wrote this year's story, their only writing credit is for the 2K18 My Career story, and I think that speaks volumes. I the name escapes me at the moment, but you know, I've criticized that for what it is. the story is just not it. The characters, everything's off-putting this year, and it's it just doesn't, something about it just doesn't feel right. And it's the running through the neighborhood, it's going back and forth, it's all the grinding, it's the story, it's I don't know who was asking for what they've done this year, or if anyone was. But they've done it, and it just hasn't been appealing to me. And there are some other things with the game, like the new motion system, the hip riding, where you can just basically get on anyone's hip. And you know, when you can drive from the perimeter with Luke Longley to finish at the rim with a driving dunk from the perimeter, you know that the motion system needs a bit more polish, basically. So, yeah, that's been the big issue. And, I mean, there was the brick wall issue in 2K17, which is a big thing. It needs to be somewhere in between, basically. In between what they got this year and what they had last year would be a really sweet spot for the physicality and motion for the game, basically.
I think with 2K, they've kind of taken a few risks as far as the story element of their game and that kind of stuff. And for that, I admire that risk taking. But at the same time, at the end of the day, all you want to do is play basketball. Like, you don't want to sit through 10 minutes or whatever of cutscenes. I remember one of my favorite YouTubers, I think his name is Funky Diabetic, he kind of said that to get through, I think, the initial cutscenes of the game, you need to wait like 90 minutes or I can't remember the exact number, but I was just thinking, wow, that's a lot of unskippable cutscenes.
it is, and that's the other thing. If you're not feeling the story, you're not digging the cutscenes, so to speak, Yeah, it's very painful, but yeah, I did love 2K17, so I wouldn't mind dusting it off. I've got it installed, actually. I reinstalled it for features and to pick it up again, and I actually want to do a comparison of shooting, whether my playmaker last year is as good as my... really, you know, whether it really is inferior to my sharpshooting playmaker build in 2K18, because, I don't know, I felt last year worked out kind of better, and part of that's the different shooting mechanics, because they took away the stick aiming this year. Which was a big thing once we got that to work for us last year. But yeah, I'm still pro 2K17 basically.
Yeah, and I think, when does the 2K17 server go out exactly?
I think that would be based on previous games, 31st of December this year. Like, and end of this year, I think, is when it cuts out, because I think it's got the 27 months, which is the two seasons plus another 3 months into the third season after that. So I'm guessing 2K17 will be, end of this year.
Because, like, one of the thoughts I had when I was playing 2K17 was that, you know, when the social media people like Ronnie and I guess any other representatives that 2K have, when they see something like, oh, I'm going to play Fortnite now instead of playing 2K18, they're going to probably think, so what? Like, you're going to play a completely different game. There's not much we can really do about that.
Yeah, it's like you bought a basketball, you go to a different genre. What can you do?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But if people are going back to 2K17 and like are vocal about going back to 2K17, and I'm not saying harass Ronnie on Twitter or anything, but you know, all I'm saying is that, you know, if people in 2K see the metrics and see people are going back to 2K17, maybe they'll ask themselves, what is it about 17 that people are leaving 2K18 for?
Mm.
And I think that's like my whole point about going back to it. It's that maybe, you know, feedback is fine, but at the same time, they're pretty much going to go by the numbers. And the numbers are suggesting that 2K18 has been a massive hit and the retention rate's excellent and all that kind of stuff. So I think if you really want to get the message across that 2K18 hasn't been acceptable in areas, then go back to the older version.
Yeah, and give it a try. It yeah, and certainly, yeah, letting your voice be heard about either going back to 2K17 or going to Live 18, it's really speaks volumes about, especially with Live still coming along into developing into a better game again. To say people are already enjoying that, and I think Live 18 is a very enjoyable game for despite the fact it's still got a ways to go. So I think it has drawn people in as very successfully, as we've said before, and as we said earlier in the show. So, again, like going back to 2K17 speaks volumes about the quality of the experience. And I think a lot of the retention this year has been people just have to do it with the grind. So it's whether people have been doing it out of protest or necessity, you know, just having to. They're spending a lot of time with the game, but there's no choice not to, kind of thing. And
yeah,
is it just going to be where they're sure it's working out now in the short term, but are people just going to be so burned out on the microtransactions and the gouging and the grinding and everything that when 2K19 comes out, I mean, a lot more people than before are saying not only are they enjoying Live more, but they're not getting 2K again now, or this year at least. Now, that's a very hard thing to do because of 2K's overall quality, and you know, I wouldn't begrudge anyone for changing their mind about it, but yeah, the as we've said before, there's a lot of disgruntled fans this year. There seems to be more people than ever saying, you know, 2K19 is really going to have to win me back. And that's, you know, for the 2K series, which has been so successful and sold millions of copies every year since 2K11, it's noteworthy, if nothing else.
Definitely. And I know personally, I'm probably going to buy 2K19, but I guess I just want to see how 2K19 goes after the backlash, whether they have listened to the criticism or whether they're just going to continue to stay the path. If they
say, we're lit, we're great, we're...
Because, you know, if they do continue to do what they're doing, I would have no problem with putting it down and playing Live 19 or, you know, even God of War, which I just recently bought. So that's a... That's quite an excellent game. A
lot of options out there, that's the thing. And I mean, only some of them are catered to basketball aficionados, of course. But that's the thing. If you do need to take a break from basketball, you can always... Well, you can play an old favorite, as long as there's... Even if there's enough offline content, you can play an old favorite even without the servers. So, yeah. But that's... I mean, 2K17, I would be interested in going back to it, as I said. Live 18, I've been playing Live 18, of course, mostly Ultimate Team. I don't know if you've been keeping up with the podcast or the thread in the forum or anything, but I've got my 90s All-Star squad these days, and that's a lot of fun to play with.
So you're still looking for Penny, aren't you?
I am still. I'm looking at them. There was one in the auction house the other day. I probably should have got it, but I ended up spending it on the Celtics, spending my coins on the Celtics pack instead, and I got Kevin McHale and Bob Cousy. Not bad players, obviously, but I wanted Larry Bird. So that
Cousy, was bloody terrible, mate. I got Cous as well, and in one of my packs, I think it was it's only a temporary card though. It was from the challenge that you did where you played against like the all-time Celtics team or something.
Oh, yep.
That was pretty cool. I haven't played with him yet, but my current, I guess, classic point guard at the moment is Nate Archibald.
He's
a lot of fun. So he's got really good handles and decent three-point shot as well.
I think they've boosted a lot of the legends just so they're not completely useless, some of them, from three-point range. And if you go back to look at the footage, obviously, a lot of those players could knock down from... They'd be able to shoot threes if they had the three-point line, of course. There was just no incentive to necessarily shoot from 23, 24 feet out. But my current three-headed monster at point guard is John Stockton, Gary Payton, and... Tim Hardaway Senior. So I mean, I'm not missing Anthony Hardaway that much, but yeah, I'd kind of like to pair him up with Shaq, I suppose, because they fixed Shaq's dunk package, so he's actually dunking on people now. But he doesn't finish layups a lot. He misses a lot of shots around the rim, which is very weird because I mean, Shaq dunked a lot, but he also made a lot of little hooks and things, so he was still able to do that. So I don't know what's going on there.
He had the league in field goal percentage for quite a few seasons, didn't he?
Quite a few seasons. Got up to 60%, I believe, around about 60% a couple of years, yeah. So he definitely should be making more than art dunks, but it is nice that he can power down a little bit more often. They even got the Shaq attack dunk with him when he's hanging on the rim and the knees up and everything, so that was cool. I took a screenshot of that. I have to put that out on social media. I don't think I shared that one publicly, actually. So I've just been playing the challenges. I want to play through the playoffs challenges, of course, because they've got all that going at the moment with the ladder players, and I suppose with the first round coming to an end, they've got to get that done because they're going to lose some of those players shortly, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I need to do the same thing because I finished the initial challenges and got the cards and stuff. But, yeah, if you do play through the challenges, you get the permanent card of that player, which would be cool for, like, I'm looking at some of the players on the list. Draymond Green is one of them. He would be a good one to have a permanent of. Who else? Ricky Rubio, he would be a cool one. I'd also like an Al Horford as well. Oh, and Kyle Korver for his three-point shot.
So you get some pretty solid players. I mean, it's very hard to break my rotation of 90s All-Stars at the moment because I'm on the whole nostalgia kick with them at the moment. But to do some of the Master Challenges and such, and some of the challenges you need where you need a certain amount of players for from a certain team, for example, it would just be handy to have those as well. I'm guessing they would count. Mm. So I also did that. This week's challenge, in lieu of the Legends Challenge, you either got the playoff ladder, rookie ladder, Team of the Week, or a Big Moments card, and I ended up getting a Team of the Week Antetokounmpo, and that's a pretty solid card. If nothing else, he's got a great finishing rating, so he's, as you'd expect, throw down in traffic, the Greek Freak there. So, yeah, I was quite happy with that.
Just trying to think of who I'm running with at the moment. I think it's Nate Archibald at the point guard. I put Dion Waiters as my shooting guard because he's like a video game favorite of mine. I've got Simmons at small forward, Joel Embiid at the center, and my power forward, I just can't think of who it is at the moment, but I'm pretty sure it's like a gold card at the very... No, wait. I think it's Patrick Patterson, actually, of
Patrick
all people.
Patterson, okay. He's got some three-point range on him, I believe.
Yeah, and I think he's there because he was one of the Christmas cards that I got, so that's why he's there. But yeah, I particularly enjoy playing with Simmons, and I actually hit a three with him.
Has he made a three all season in real life?
He hasn't, and I think that's one of the arguments against him, I think, for Rookie of the Year, because he hasn't hit one. And I think, you know, even Donovan Mitchell, I think he's probably like league average from beyond the arc. But even with that, people are like, he's still a better three-point shooter than Ben Simmons. Mm. But, yeah, that's a whole other discussion.
But, I'm running with Karl Malone and Sean Kemp as my power forwards at the moment. So, but it's Cavs Kemp, so he's rated a little bit lower, unfortunately. But he was cheaper in the auction house. I would like to get Sonics Kemp, although, of course, I've got Peyton, Sonics Peyton. But he shows up with the Thunder logo on his jersey because I've got the All Star jerseys from this year that show the individual team logos, which I thought was the best thing to do for Ultimate Team. I just thought it'd be a cool concept to have that for the Ultimate Team. Use this year's All Star jerseys with that concept, but so of course, you know, Pippen's got Bulls and Rodman. I've got a Bulls Rodman, so he's got Bulls and all that's accurate and everything. Of course, they're the current logo. So you've got Hakeem with the current Rockets logo instead of the old school one, unfortunately. But yeah, it's got Thunder for Peyton. You're like, oh, that's a shame that it's not
dagger in the heart.
Yeah, I'm sure he's thrilled about it as well, knowing how he feels about the whole situation. But no, it's Ultimate Team is fun and. They could be doing more with a mode like Domination, for example. I'd love to see them get a mode like similar to Domination. Not identical, they can do their own version of it. And some more weekly content and more Big Moments challenges, things like that. But no, I've been pretty happy with Ultimate Team this year. It's been my mode of choice again.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely the deepest mode in NBA Live 18 at the moment.
although it could stand to have some more depth. I'd like to have them more GM checklists. I think that more than two levels, you really need to have just have more to do that, and some more stuff than just, you know, sell 25 things in the auction house, sell 25 cards, or that. I think more goals for the checklist and maybe some checklist updates throughout the year.
Yeah, that one about selling the cards on the auction house is pretty easy to get around.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you done it yet?
I did it, yeah. I've completed both checklists this year. Yeah, managed to face someone online even for head-to-head and actually complete that one. So I managed to complete the checklist. Yeah.
I was so happy to get that out of the way because I was just like, oh, once I played it once online, I don't have to do it again.
Same, yeah. I think we both did that as well for the trophy, didn't we, when we played head to head?
Yeah, definitely.
We played the two.
And I think mainly a lot of that is because of the fact that the servers are really laggy. Like people give 2K crap about their servers, but I think at least their online play is fairly playable.
Yeah, this year is for us at least here in Australia has not been good for online. I guess they don't have Australian servers, so
yeah. Well, that's obviously a huge issue. So,
And again, why Live needs to have that offline content, because if you don't have that great online experience from where you are, or you don't like online experiences in general, you know, you need something to keep you in the game, basically. So that's, yeah, I mean, people talk about gameplay being the most important thing, and it is, but you also need that content and the modes as well, because otherwise you need something to keep you hooked.
Definitely. And I think that's a big part of why I actually went back to 2K17 is that there just doesn't seem to be a whole heap of content with Live, even though I haven't done all the challenges in Live Ultimate Team, but, you know, at the same time, I just kind of...
They're there if you want to.
They're there if I want to play it, but I think you kind of want a bit of diversity in your gameplay options. Like, I don't always want to play Live Ultimate Team.
Yeah.
And with NBA Live...
I love to play franchise, you know, but it's just not where it needs to be.
Yeah, if you want to play NBA Live, then Live Ultimate Team is pretty much the mode, apart from, like, you know, Pro-Am and that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you want a decent franchise mode, then you pretty much have to go back to 2... Well, I have to go back to 2K17.
Agreed.
Maybe. I don't know what 2K18 is like with a franchise. Heard it's, like, pretty decent.
Oh, I mean, my league is fine. My GM has gone with Destroy this year, which a lot of people are unhappy about, and you can't use a custom roster in my GM because it's tied to the story, much like my career. My league is fine. It's I think most people, it's more about if they don't like 2K18's gameplay, then it's, yeah, you kind of have to go back to 2K17 for the gameplay in that respect. But then, you know, the updated rosters, but whole thing, I guess, but... Of course, you've still got roster updates for 2K17. People are still making, I suppose. But yeah, it's. I guess it's the important thing is at the end of the day we have options. But speaking of going back to 2K17 or 2K18 and what we're doing with online, we played a session of Pro-Am last week, Kenny. Friday night, I should say, and it was another rough session. The last two sessions have just been really, really tough. We thought we were going well. We'd been running these plays and getting a bit of triangle action going on, and the session before last we'd gone 4-1 and seemed to be working. The last two sessions have just been it was back to early in the year where we had to take a break basically, and it's disappointing that we couldn't get anything going defensively. We couldn't make shots, and they were just making all kinds of ridiculous shots. And they were the 7'3" player cheese is still a thing in Pro-Am, unfortunately. So it's going to come down to grind. Maybe the certainly it's time out for grind time at the moment, unfortunately. But it's it's just a shame because last year we were so hooked, even when we didn't necessarily, we didn't have the fantastic record last year or anything, but we still enjoyed it. And this year it just hasn't been there.
Yeah, I kind of had like an extended break from it, 2K17, but
I remember that.
Think, it is kind of a shame that you have kind of come to that conclusion for 2K18, but I guess it's kind of a cyclical thing when it comes to 2K Pro-Am. You know, there are times where you're going to need a break because there's just nothing going your way, and maybe you'll come back to it and have a great time again. And then, you know, once you start getting really high in the mode, you start to not get a break again, and yeah, all the stuff goes against you and all that. So I think that's just kind of the nature of 2K Pro-Am at this point.
Good point.
At least for me anyway, like, it's just ebbs and flows like that, and it has done since 2K16, although I don't think we played 2K16 Pro-Am as much.
Not as much, but I mean, that was the first time we really all got into it, and it was quite enjoyable. And then 2K17, yeah. I think a break is the right thing to do again. Just no one's really been having that much fun with it. It's just been frustrating to do, and we're trying to run the plays and trying to set screens, and you're getting sucked into these two-man animations that you can't run off screens and everything, and it's just... That stuff's not going to be fixed this year. Maybe it's going to be better in 2K19. Hopefully it is with a continued polish to the motion system and physics and everything, but yeah, it may just be a case of having to take a break, and something that I brought up in our Facebook group where we were, you know, set up the games and chatting everything with each other about this stuff. It might be that we just, for the social aspect and the camaraderie, just get together on Friday nights or whatever for just go on someone's My Court and play a 2v2 or something like that, and just chat and hang out and play against each other. It might be more fun than what we're doing at the moment.
I mean, it's definitely worth a shot. I know I'd kind of like to get back into the Pro-Am thing next year, so maybe. We'll see. I mean, after all the reports, I'm kind of like, I'm constantly going back and forth like, yeah, playing Pro-Am again would be cool, but then I hear about those nightmare sessions, and it's like, I kind of remember those, and... You know,
yeah. No, it's
being really frustrated by the experience. So
I had a hard time selling you on it this year. To be honest, it's not been as good as last year, and even with some of the struggles we had in last year's game. But no, I'd be up for trying 2K17 just to see if we could get a game. I'd like to be able to throw an alley-oop again that people can actually catch. You know, and not have to grind all my way to a. I mean, this is the stupid thing, as I've said before, is to throw an alley-oop. You really need to get the Lob City pass a badge. But to get the badge, you need to be able to complete alley-oops. But to complete alley-oops, you need the badge. And so it just goes back and forth. It's just such a poor design concept that you need that the badges. You're so reliant on the badges this year to do anything. And that's what gets you grinding, and that's what gets that retention rates and everything. And yeah, you can sort of see that it's not that you have to work to have fun, whereas last year it came a bit more naturally. So yeah, it's just been a bit disappointing in that regard. But hey, if nothing else, we can have games of horse on someone's My Court. That's
yeah, that could be fun.
So there is that.
Maybe even and I don't know about Leo, but X has got NBA Live 18, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. I'd be up for giving Live 18 more of a go. It's if we're all together, we might have a better experience than playing with randoms.
I mean, if it's how much is it at the moment? It's like $20, $10 on the PSN.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, we might be able to convince Leo to buy the game as well. So
with a shot, of course. So Azizi's got it as well. So,
of course, yeah. So I could probably, I don't know, I'd probably end up using my center because I don't know how many people have created centers. So
no, I think Ben's a wing player again, and I'm a point shooter, basically a live equivalent of my 2K Pro-Am player. So.
Oh, that's cool. My center's rated 98 anyway, so that would work for me.
It's a shame we can't have the... This is a shame there's no squad options, basically. That is, again, the big thing they need to do moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to see that in NBA Live 19. I think it's one of the missing pieces to the puzzle. There are a few, but I think, yeah, that is definitely a big one.
It's just expanding on... They've got the groundwork for it. They've got the foundation for a lot of these great modes. It's just the lack of depth and content that if they add that in and can keep polishing the gameplay, I think they're going to, you know, just as Saber has this great opportunity with NBA Playgrounds 2, I think EA has a great opportunity, I should say, with Live 19 this year. 2K has been losing face with what it's been doing. Live 18 made great strides. If Live 19 keeps making strides and takes that next step and adds that content and keeps polishing, that could be a really good game, like a really, really good game. And that's going to win people back because the brand is becoming less of a joke. People are realizing, oh, EA has been working hard on it, and Live 18 is showing that improvement and that the results of that hard work. So they have that opportunity, and I hope they capitalize on it as well.
And there's a lot of opportunities within their, I guess, within the branding as well, as far as Pro-Am is concerned. So instead of having to use like our own custom jerseys, we could use like Drew League jerseys, crossover yep. league jerseys. Like, in it doesn't have to be like completely customized. And even doing that it that way would probably be a good way to get around the whole issue of people, you know, having inappropriate images on their jerseys or downright creepy ones. Like absolutely. In 2K17. So,
I mean,
I'd be all for that.
The other thing, of course, with that, you could have it almost a situation like Ultimate Team where you could earn the jerseys as a squad, maybe by completing offline challenges or, online co-op against the CPU, where perhaps if you defeat a team, you can get their jerseys or things like that. I mean, you could do a lot and then wear those jerseys against other teams online. Things like that would be, you know, I think viable. And if you set it that way, if you did it that way, you could also say, well, these are the home jerseys, these are the away jerseys. So you could avoid some of those clashes, like the times when we'd play with our blue away jerseys against home blue jerseys in Pro-Am. Still a problem this year, because they don't restrict that in Pro-Am. They do have a message that says they advise you to make white home jerseys and coloured away jerseys, but people don't. You don't, and it's no restriction on it, so the people still don't. And so you do have those clashes. If you did earn real jerseys, like Drew League jerseys or whatever, you could avoid that, and it would be, you could still have that team aspect. That you're all wearing the same jerseys. But I think the other big thing for me with it goes for the one as well, but certainly the streets, especially with that being and live run and everything being the online co-op mode, they need the better camera angles in Live 19. I think more like 2K cam where it shows a better view of the court, because I forget which camera angle I'm using at the moment in Live 18 for play lock. It's not the play lock cam, it's one of the baseline ones. But it just doesn't have the same view of the court as 2K cam. They just still need to get that right. And also focus on your player rather than the ball.
Yeah, I think for me, I have the same camera for player lock, but when I'm playing 5-on-5, I have the sideline camera.
Same.
So basically just the broadcast. And the game looks so amazing with the broadcast camera. Like, I think that a lot of the issues with animations are kind of emphasized when you use that back, like that baseline camera, because mm-hmm. it just looks kind of unprofessional. But from like a presentation standpoint, that sideline camera is amazing.
Oh yeah, I definitely prefer that for 5-on-5, and that's what I use for Ultimate Team and whatnot. But For player lock, I think it's baseline high I might use. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it's the one that I feel has the best view of the court available for player lock and for live, but I'd still like it to be zoomed out a little bit more and to focus on your player, because if once your player goes off screen, it's too easy to lose what they're doing, even with the off screen indicator in Live 18. No, it needs to follow your player and not the ball. Or certainly show it all at once, much like the 2K cam.
Yeah, and I think the camera thing might be position to do with positions as well, because I know as a center I'd probably be more inclined for the sideline because I run from hoop to hoop, whereas as a point guard you kind of need the camera to behind you so you can see the passing lane. So
definitely.
But I don't know. Maybe with my point guard I'll try and play with the sideline cam and see how that goes.
It's been a while since I gave it a shot, but that is another improvement I'd like to see in Live 19, nevertheless. So I think that's pretty much it for my stories this week. I've played a few sessions of Live with Ultimate Team and of course, Pro-Am, but yeah, that's pretty much all I've done this week, I think.
And I think that has me covered as well. I was going to mention, like, I did do the Master League Challenge, I think, with Master League? Is that what it's called?
Oh, the Master Challenges, yeah.
Yeah, Master Challenges. I completed the Los Angeles Lakers one. Bit disappointed I didn't get Lonzo Ball, but Julius Randle's pretty good. So,
have you able to do the ones with like Vince Carter and everything?
Vince Carter,
there's some new Master Challenges with Vince Carter and some other throwback players. Well, young Vince Carter, I think.
I haven't done the throwback ones so much. Just like I think they're the weekly ones or. I'm not sure. Just I did the one with the classic Celtics lineup, and
oh yes,
I think that's about it, really.
Yeah, with the new Master Challenges, there's one for they got. I think they got a Dr. J, and they got Vince Carter, and things like that. So they got some retro ones, which are pretty cool. I need to qualify for them first to get some of the cards to qualify and get them a shot.
I might check those out. But at the moment, I'm just kind of working through the current league teams. So
definitely. So with our weeks in basketball game being covered, before we wrap up the NLSC podcast episode number 245, just thought we'd cover the NBA playoffs very quickly. Actually, there is a piece of news that's just come through that's rather interesting, is that Andrew Bogut has signed with the Sydney Kings.
Really? I'm kind of surprised that he didn't sign with Melbourne United, actually. But Sydney Kings, that's a massive coup for them.
Yeah, it's... Simon with the Kings for the 2018-19 season, announcing the move on Twitter, recently expressed a desire to return home to play in the NBL and spend more time with his family and with his wife. Apparently her pregnancy has been diagnosed as high risk. Hope everything works out well there, but certainly understandable wanting to be close to family. But yeah, it looks like at least for the moment his NBA career might be done.
Yeah, I think it's great for the NBL to get him back. I mean, as much as I've kind of criticize some of the things he said in the past, I think he is he will be a massive draw card for people to go along to games, and I kind of liked his attitude as far as signing in the NBL. And he did this interview where they asked him, they were like, well, Chris Anstey said he was worried about your legacy if you're going back to the NBL, and he's just like, oh, I don't really care about that. And I thought that was a good attitude for him to have. So
well, look, he spent 33 years old. He spent 13 years in the NBA, had the championship with the Warriors in 2015, made an All-NBA second team, was for, I think, a long time the most successful. I mean, I suppose by championships, Luke Longley's the most successful Aussie in the NBA, but in terms of role and everything, one of our most successful exports to the NBA. I think Ben Simmons is going to leave him in the dust, possibly by the end of next season, if not this season, at least from an individual standpoint. And I think Simmons will be our first All-Star, and that'll be great to see. But, 13 years in the NBA, I know a lot of players are going 15, 16, almost 20 years these days. It's becoming more commonplace. But that's over a decade in the league and a pretty solid career as it is, and a first overall pick and everything, the first Australian to go first overall. I think that's a pretty impressive legacy, and if he does wrap up his career playing at home here in the NBL, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Absolutely not, and there are some other international players that have come back to the NBL. Obviously not as big as Andrew Bogut, but David Anderson comes to mind. He had a lot of very successful seasons in Europe, and even a stint in the NBA. Yeah, he came back and actually won a championship with Melbourne United. So, I don't think it's hurt his legacy as much. Obviously, he's not as big a player as Andrew Bogut, but I think as far as Bogut's concerned, he's kind of looked done for a while. Like, even when he was with the Lakers, he was only really a bit player in that system, in a team that wasn't kind of making a charge to the playoffs. So I know there were a lot of kind of teams that were competing in the playoffs that wanted his services, by all reports. But if he was to continue in the NBA, he was never going to be more than, say, the 11th or 12th player on the squad.
With the way the NBA has evolved with the stretch bigs and everything, it does seem that his skill set is not necessarily, not completely outdated or outmoded, but not necessarily the best fit for today's game in the NBA. And as you said, he did seem to be falling out of the rotation, not necessarily playing games in. Well, when he first went to Dallas, he was getting did not plays, coach's decision there, and then the injury that stopped his stint in Cleveland last year, and the finishing up with the Lakers very quickly, not getting a lot of court time. It's, do you want to be a bit player, or do you want to come home and play close to home and close to family and actually? Because I think he's always talked about finishing his career in the NBL, has he not? Or alluded to a desire or being open to the possibility.
He's definitely alluded to it a few times. I'm not sure whether he did it in his prime necessarily, but he has kind of hinted to it, on several occasions. And you know, it could be really big for the league. And with all these other kind of rules about, didn't they have like some kind of deal for players to kind of do like the one and done in the NBL or something like that, like to forego college?
I think so, yeah, because a couple of players have done that, I believe.
So, like, and there's been like players like the player on the Thunder, Terrence Ferguson, yeah. He played in the NBL for the season, and he ended up getting drafted fairly high by the Oklahoma City Thunder. And so I'm just hoping that Bogut's addition can kind of bring more spotlight to the league and make it stronger.
Well, the NBL has made such great strides in the last couple of years. I think they've done a great job rebranding and remarketing the league and repositioning it as a legitimate professional sporting league in Australia, and a league that can farm players to the NBA or certainly continue to have success here locally. So getting a big name for the league is certainly not going to hurt at all. And if you can give the Kings, because he was going to play for the Kings, I think, during the lockout. That was the deal they were trying to work out, I believe. Back in 2011, 2012, that lockout, I thought he was looking to come to the Kings possibly, and it fell through. But because I remember Paddy Mills ended up with the Tigers, didn't he, when Melbourne was still the Tigers?
Yeah, he did.
Played briefly with them. And yeah, I think Bogut was looking to come to the Kings at the time. So as you said, I mean, Melbourne you would have thought, because that's where he's from, but Sydney means I guess I can get down to a game and catch that, I suppose. Easier to get to a Kings game than a Melbourne United game for me at the moment anyway. So yeah, maybe, but well, best of luck to him. And yeah, I guess overall good for the league, our league. Moving to the NBA now, the playoffs roll on, the first round, and of course we have the first team to get out of the first round, and who, of course, but the Pelicans. And I had the Blazers winning in six, and boy, was I wrong. I completely misjudged the Pelicans on this one. Just rolled over the Blazers. Damian Lillard not looking that great at the moment.
Definitely not, particularly since I think Rondo, he had 16 assists in the last game. And how many did Lillard have all up? It was like 18?
Something like that, yeah. Over the course of the season, series, I should say, not... Not his best showing by assists or shooting, for that matter.
Yeah, and I think Anthony Davis and I think Drew Holiday as well came up big in the last game. They both scored over 40.
Holiday's had a great series, yeah. He and Rondo really outplayed McCollum and Lillard in that one.
Yeah, so I think I picked the Blazers as well, maybe, in my bracket. My bracket's been completely busted, though, so... I picked the Spurs in six as my long shot. So that's obviously not going to happen.
No, I don't think they're going to make it done in seven unless they really turn things around. Damian Lillard for the series, 19 assists, 18 turnovers, 74 points, 71 shots, and swept is basically the image from NBA Buzz that they shared. So definitely not the Dame that we've come to expect.
No, but at the same time, I think the Blazers aren't really known for making it deep in the playoffs, not in the last like 10 or 15 years really, with maybe the exception of the time that they blew that lead against the Lakers.
That's 2000, that's almost 20 years ago now. That's scary to think, actually.
But yeah, they haven't made it too deep, even with like some of those great players that they had, like Brandon Roy and a few others.
Aldridge and Roy. Yeah. But as far as Lillard goes, I mean, a couple of years ago he was complaining about not making the All-Star team, and then a lot of people calling him underrated, and I think at times perhaps he was overlooked a little bit because I do think he's a very talented player, but you look at a performance like this, it is just one series. A lot of really great players have had bad series. I mean, not to compare him to LeBron James, because LeBron is a much higher level than Damian Lillard, of course. But you look at LeBron had that very pedestrian 2011 NBA Finals, the second round in 2010 when the Celtics beat the Cavs, and LeBron seemed to disappear in those last couple of games. I mean, great players. Magic, when they lost that year, was called Tragic Johnson until they redeemed themselves the following season. So, I mean, the best of the best have had their moments where it's just been one of those things, I guess. But is this perhaps proof that Lillard is not so much a franchise player or a great player, just maybe a very, very good one? Which is still nothing to sneeze at, but is he perhaps more of a sidekick than he is a franchise player? Is this a sign of that, perhaps?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it has more to do with the people around him, though. For me, it's tough because, like, he kind of almost falls into the same conversation as Chris Paul in that sense.
Mm.
But I think Chris Paul is more than just a very good player. Like, I think he has the potential to be their franchise player. And, you know, you just have to look at the Clippers this season to kind of see that, yeah, that was the case, that he did carry that franchise. It wasn't that he couldn't make it to make it past the second round. They couldn't make it to the playoffs without him. Like,
yeah.
So I think he elevates teams, and I think Lillard has elevated that team for pretty much his entire career. I think it's just maybe he needs people around him being a point guard. I think, you know, CJ McCollum's a very good player, but not exactly proven in the playoffs or anything like that. And
Evan Turner, obviously problematic. Looks like the Nuggets made a great decision with keeping Jokic over Nurkic.
It definitely looks that way, but at the same time, Nurkic actually played in the finals, so I mean the playoffs. Yeah,
that's true. That came down to the final. Did you catch any of that game at all?
No, I was at work at the time, but I was following like the box scores and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah.
I was just like, oh.
And then it gets to overtime, and nail biting.
Yeah.
Minnesota, of course, who got in on that game, they just won. They drew for their first blood in the series to make it 2-1 in the favor of the Rockets now, 121-105, though. So a bit of a bounce-back performance after the first couple of games. The first game was close, the second game not so much, but Butler was very quiet in those first games. He really exploded, came out in the game three. Towns finally had a decent game with 18 points, 16 rebounds. Towns was just very quiet in those first two games. He was really being outplayed by Clint Capella, who's didn't have a great game three, but was looking pretty good before that.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk about stars faltering in the playoffs, I don't think you can look much further than James Harden. Like, he has previously faltered in the playoffs, and I think a lot of people still think of him as a big time player. So,
good point.
Yeah. I still think that the Rockets are probably going to make it out of the West, but I guess nothing is.
Well, see, nothing is certain the problem point. With the Rockets making it out of the West is that I picked them to do so, which means I've jinxed them. So my apologies to Rockets fans everywhere for that particular what I've done with them there. But no, I think they're in a position to do it. It's just going to come down to, can they overcome Golden State? How healthy is Stephen Curry going to be? Because he's still out. That's a question mark right there. Spurs, it looks like they're on the verge of being swept. Kawhi Leonard still out of, and that's a really weird situation with Kawhi at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it, honestly, because it just goes against everything that you've kind of learned about Kawhi over the course of his career. Like, he didn't seem like a player that would kind of upset the chemistry of a team like that.
No, not at all.
I mean, at the start of his career, we all thought Kevin Durant was like this kind of mild-mannered person.
Not quite, yes.
So, yeah, we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes.
Indiana and Cleveland, I picked the Cavs to win in six. To do that, they're going to have to win the next three in a row. But I did say that if the Pacers did win, it wouldn't surprise me too much, and I thought they would make it competitive. People were talking about how they were going to get swept. I thought that was ridiculous because the Pacers did well against the Cavs this season, during the regular season, and certainly showed a lot of heart and hustle at times, and only a couple of games behind them in the standings. But they're 2-1, and the next game is in Indiana. So if they go up 3-1, the Pacers, obviously, they've got to win that fourth one, and we have seen 3-1 comebacks, including one from LeBron in the finals in the Cavs, but a much stronger Cavs team, I would have to say, in that one. And Yeah, I mean, the Cavs blew a 17-point lead to the Pacers in Game 3. And Pacers, if they do go up 3-1, they've got a tremendous opportunity to become the first team to defeat LeBron in the first round.
Yeah, well, I still think the Cavs have got another gear. Whether or not... Yeah, it's an interesting one, the Cavs, because there's all that stuff going on with Tristan Thompson at the moment as well, off the court. So maybe they will bow out this year. I'm not writing them off, but this year just feels different, doesn't it?
I think people undersold Kyrie because they talk about LeBron carrying Kyrie, but I think Kyrie brought his own skill to the table when he hit the big shot down the stretch when they won the finals. They won the championship in 2016. And I don't know what it is about people and Kyrie that they don't really give him the credit that he deserves. I mean, maybe the efficiency isn't always there. Maybe he's not necessarily... He's not LeBron James, but without him, you know, it's... the Cavs are in a much more precarious position. And I believe Kevin Love just injured his hand. He re-injured that hand that he broke. It's a slight ligament tear. So that's going to affect him, obviously, I would have to imagine. Yeah, it could happen. It's the Pacers. I think they've already are going up 2-1. I think are doing better than a lot of people gave them credit for. So, I mean, 2-1 in the first round is not exactly something to congratulate in the normal sense. But I think people need to give them some credit there, because a lot of people were saying, this is just going to be LeBron's warm up to the finals, to the conference finals or the NBA finals or whatever. But Pacers, they're actually making the Cavs sweat, I think.
Yeah, just a little bit. But at the same time, yeah, I still think the Cavs have got another gear. And although they don't have the same team as they did last year, I remember how much were they down against the Toronto Raptors? Was it like 2-1, 3-1?
Yeah,
something along 2-1, those lines. Yeah. And they still managed to come back from that. And
true.
I think as long as you've got LeBron James on your team, you're always a chance to win a series. So
definitely. So certainly in the first round, I mean, against some of the other opponents or anyone coming out of the West, I don't know. But against the Pacers, yeah, I certainly couldn't write them out winning the next 3 in a row. It would not be unprecedented.
No, it wouldn't be. But at the same time, I'd like to see the Pacers get over the hump, because they've been a great rival for Cleveland, in previous playoff series. And I would love to see them just get that one over them.
Oh, the Lance Stephenson memes are just going to be next level, I think, for the internet. Internet is undefeated, after all.
And, it's great seeing him back in the league and contributing as well, because he was like, he was with the Charlotte Hornets.
With the Hornets,
yeah. Seemed like he was just going to, fade out of the league, but, yeah, it's good to see him back.
Yeah, back perhaps where he should have been all along, Indiana.
Yeah, definitely.
So looking at some of the other results around the league at the moment, the Raptors, of course, are now 2-1 over the Wizards. The Wizards beat them in Game 3. The Bucks didn't even things up, but they got a game against the Celtics, who went up on them 2-1. They're up 2-1 now, I should say. How do you feel about the Celtics? I mean, I picked them in 5, and I'm still fairly confident about that, because they opened the first 2 games pretty well. But yeah, I think they're going to get that second round, and they're going to face the winner of 76ers and Heat, which certainly looking like the 76ers at the moment, up 3-1. With Kyrie out and Hayward doesn't look like he's going to come back, I think that's basically going to be it for them if they get through to the second round.
Honestly, I thought they were cooked for this first round. I picked the Bucks in 6 because I thought without Irving and Hayward, they just weren't going to have enough weaponry on the offensive end. But I obviously forgot about Al Horford. He himself is an all-star. I'm always forgetting that. But
very quietly.
I guess I'm reminded of that because... of a conversation I had with X about how he was he stole an all-star jersey of Andrew Bogut 1 year. So Al Horford's still a very good player, and they have Jaylen Brown had a big game in there.
Brown and Tatum have both been pretty decent.
So
Rozier,
Terry Rozier, their future's looking excellent at the moment with their young players. So Yeah, maybe they will make it to the second round.
Maybe maybe in a couple of years we'll see Lakers versus Celtics in the finals again. Is that what Warriors might have to drop off a little bit for that to happen, but Celtics and, at least will get there.
Yeah, the Lakers with the three Ball brothers playing on the team. Yeah,
Of course they'll go 82-0 and win and sweep the playoffs as well, won't they? I mean, that's
absolutely
that's what we're willing to believe.
Not a jump shot between them.
Ben Simmons, speaking of like a jump shot, as much as I like the guy, first triple, got a triple double, the first rookie to do so since Magic Johnson, actually, up 3-1. The Heat did get that game off the throwback performance by Dwayne Wade, who's still coming off the bench, of course. Whiteside played a little bit more. Whiteside's been making a bit of noise lately. His attitude has been a little bit suspect, to say the least. But 76ers, what can you say except trust the process? They're really, right up to the 52 wins this year and looking to go up into the second round. People are talking about them making the finals. I mean, wouldn't that be crazy?
It would be crazy. And I've actually picked them to make the finals, strangely enough. But, yeah.
It could happen. It sounds crazy, but is it?
I don't think it is that crazy, particularly since they have, outside of Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid is one of the best centers in the league, even though he's, only in his second season. And they have other great complementary players with them as well, like J.J. Redick, who can, knock down a three-pointer as well as anybody and is known for hitting a big shot every now and then. And other kind of underrated players like Robert Covington and Dario Saric as well.
Bellinelli's been pretty good for them.
Yeah, Bellinelli and Ilyasova as well. They've both had some pretty good scoring efforts in the playoffs. So I think, don't sleep on the Sixers, because I think if they meet up with Cleveland in the conference finals, I don't think it's going to be as one-sided as it has been in the past.
They beat them late in the season, quite convincingly. So it will be quite a matchup, and not necessarily a passing the torch moment from LeBron to Simmons, but a moment of validation. The young guy taking it from the established player and the best player in the league, if only for a season, possibly, if that were to happen.
It would be massive for Ben Simmons' legacy as well. As far as a rookie season is concerned, he would go up. He would be up there with one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time if he could do that.
To go to the finals, yeah. I mean, that's what Magic Johnson, the last player to do that. I guess apt, I suppose. But speaking of that, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how he's not really a rookie and not technically a rookie and things like that. What do you make of that discussion?
I think it's rubbish, but I understand where people are coming from, and you have situations like that with Ben Simmons where he is a rookie in his second season, but then you also have what happened to Julius Randle, where he got injured within his first game but was considered a sophomore in his second season. It is all about technicalities and whatnot, and I think the advantage of redshirting is a bit overblown.
You're still going to get it done against NBA competition at the end of the day when you finally do make your debut. I mean, you can spend that year working with trainers and everything, but until you actually face that competition and go through the 82 game schedule and the playoffs, I mean, you are unproven.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just have to kind of look back at maybe someone like Greg Oden. He redshirted his first season, didn't he?
He did, yes.
And I mean, he was a good rookie, but at the same time, I don't think he was exactly a world beater when he was in his first season.
No.
So I think the whole redshirt thing's kind of, I don't think it's as much of an advantage as a lot of people say it is. And I don't see why people would want to stick around in college anyway. Because if Ben Simmons, if he went to college again for that second season and then arrived in the league, I'm pretty sure he would be at the same skill set that he is now, pretty much.
And when it, absolutely, and when it comes down to it, what qualifies as an NBA rookie? Somebody who has never played an official regular season game before.
Yeah.
Which he had not. Therefore, technically, he was a rookie. Until you play that game, you have 0 years experience in the league. When Arvydas Sabonis came to the league in the 95-96 season, he was a rookie, but he certainly was no rookie by, you know, by age or experience and accomplishments in Europe. I mean, one of the best players to come out of Europe, Arvydas Sabonis. He was kind of broken down and getting on there in years when he finally did come to the NBA, but he was not your average rookie to do so.
Yeah, exactly. And,
It just feels like people... feels like people are being contrarian about it just to be smart or smug. I don't know.
And I think they're nitpicking as well. Like, there is like a huge push at the moment for Donovan Mitchell to be the rookie of the year. And I think you can make a legitimate argument for him here and there because he has had an excellent season and he's led the Jazz to the playoffs. But at the same time, Simmons has got that all-round game. And I don't see how he can lose that Rookie of the Year trophy, particularly since he has had one of the all-time seasons for rookies.
Yeah.
And people say he doesn't deserve it because he can't shoot the three-pointer or he's bad at free throws or something like that. It's kind of childish, really.
Mm.
It's like, well, is that all the game's really about, like making baskets? Because he does so much more for that team than scoring points. Like,
I mean, the same arguments that they're using to prop up for someone like a LeBron are being used against him. Like, not necessarily having that all-around scoring game, or certainly more so in LeBron's earlier days. And he has struggled more from the free-throw line than LeBron did or has or still does. But, yeah, I guess it's just one of those things where people need to fight any argument they can. And if it comes down to a technicality, then they're going to push for that. But certainly my Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he's by far and away my Rookie of the Year as well, so maybe I'm biased.
I mean, I'll certainly admit to that for my part. But of course, speaking of Mitchell, yes, I mean, you're looking at another great rookie there, a very promising future in the league, and has done some great stuff with the Jazz this year. They are up 2-1 on the Thunder. That's a pretty exciting series that's developing there. I picked the Jazz in 7 on that one, but they could finish it that one in 5 or 6. Looking at, I mean, obviously it has to go to 5 because it's 2-1, but I don't think they're necessarily going to need the 7. I think they might outlast the Thunder.
Yeah, I picked the Thunder in that one, I think by 7 maybe.
Thunder and 7.
I don't know. But I just thought the Thunder had like more big game experience, like Carmelo Anthony, Russell Westbrook, Paul George. I guess overrated them in that sense, but yeah, Utah Jazz have had a fantastic season, and Joe Ingles is like the dark horse for the most improved player.
I knew you'd bring him up, but that's but that is no. He has had a fine season. You know, he's gone from an Aussie who's just got a shot at making the NBA. I think he was almost one of the last players to make the cut, wasn't he, a few years ago with the Jazz when he was first got there, and now he's a starter and right there in the rotation and having some big games for them. 21 points in game 3.
And I think he led the league in 3-point percentage as well.
Might have done, yeah. I'll just double check that, but he's certainly knocking down a lot of them. He had 4 dunks this season. I know that because the NBL Basketball Australia posted a video of all 4 of his amazing dunks this year, but
He's come a long way since I heckled him back at the Brisbane Entertainment Centre in that Australia-New Zealand game. I'm proud of him. Good for him.
Last 7 days. Whoops. Try to find. Might be playoffs. So I'll have to look at the other one. But I did think the Jazz would prevail. It did seem that the Thunder, the chemistry issues, I think, will strike at the worst possible time. Of course, you do have Westbrook trying to do pretty much a bit of everything and still chase those triple doubles.
Oh, how crazy was that last game when he was going for that triple double season? It was just like every single rebound. I just remember seeing like the highlight package and thinking, how great of a teammate is Steven Adams?
Actually, Darren Collison, leader in 3-point percentage by the end of the season.
That's a surprising one.
But Joe Ingles was actually tied for 4th with Klay Thompson, 44%.
Okay.
still very respectable in that.
Yeah, very respectable. And also, Dante Exum's back as well, and he's had a few games, a few really good games late in the season, and could very well shape as an X factor for the Jazz later on. So, some good time for Australian basketball in the NBA.
And Joe Ingles played all 82 games, started 81 of them, playing 30 minutes a game. 11.5 points on the season, 4.8 assists, 4.2 rebounds, shot over 50% from two-point range, solid shooting across the board, basically. So, yeah, as you say, we've got some great plays in there. Patty Mills has started a couple of games in the playoffs for the Spurs, with Tony Parker moving to the bench alongside Murray. So, yeah, they're getting some running time, basically.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's just a shame that Patty's probably only going to play one more game.
Mm. So that's the way the playoffs are shaping up at the moment. Almost getting through to the second round. Looks like the 76ers are on the verge of it. The Pelicans are already there. I guess it's just basically a scheduling issue that the Pelicans got there first. But I don't think a lot of people picked the Pelicans to... It's a tongue twister there. Pick a pack of Pelicans to make it to the second round.
I definitely didn't. So, this playoffs has just completely busted my bracket.
So with that being said, that has brought us to the end of episode number 245 of the NLC podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, we encourage you to tune in each and every week when we record this show, talk about our favorite subjects, as I said, basketball, video games, a little bit of real basketball as well. You can find us on iTunes. You can subscribe to us there. Leave us a review if you feel so inclined. You can also find us on the Stitcher app for Android and iOS devices. We're also on other apps. Let me just see. We're not on Spotify because we need to pay to get there, basically, because we host the podcast ourselves. Podcast Addict is the other app that we're on. If you want to search for NLC Podcast, you'll actually find us there. If you even can use the iTunes feed to find us through that app as well. Or you can keep streaming the show on the NLSC itself. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter at the NLSC. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. And we're also on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But that is it for this week. Until next week, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Kenny.
And we're out like the Blazers.